All right, everybody.
Welcome, everybody, to the show Life's a Banquet, the show that's edible, spreadable, and Zara.
Horrible.
Starring your hosts, me, Brendan Scott, and
me, Zara Tangora.
A show about ostriches, wine, and dough.
I'm drunk.
Always. Life's a banquet, life's a banquet, life's a banquet, banquet.
Five, four, three, two, and one.
Welcome to Life's a Banquet, the podcast about the highs and lows of all things edible, spreadable, and pourable. Starring your hosts, Brett and Scott, and
Zara Tangora.
Happy holidays from 95.7 FM.
Now with the weather and traffic on the ones and fours.
And today we have a partly cloudy sky. Winter is coming upon us, folks. Get out those scarves, light those fires, and toast those marshmallows because winter is here, folks. That's right. I want red hats, red gloves, pops of color.
Snow angels and snowmen and snow women.
Speaking of pops of colors, I nearly got run over walking to your house. I was walking. Zara lives in a quiet neighborhood.
A quaint neighborhood.
A quaint neighborhood.
Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn.
An undisclosed location in Carroll Gardens. It's where all the celebrity. It's basically the Beverly Hills of Brooklyn. I was walking across the quiet street, and this semi-truck going down a neighborhood street, 35 at least miles an hour.
Oh, my God.
And I saw him coming, and I kind of scooted across the street. Yes, there was it was a stop sign, but I'm walking across the street.
Yeah.
Like I had the stop sign.
Okay.
And I skittled across the street.
You skittled?
I skittled.
You skadoodled?
And he's like, beeps his giant horn to nearly blast out my ears. And I just looked at him and I said, fuck you, motherfucker, piece of shit, fuckwad. And I flipped out my finger. I was like, you know what? I just practiced an hour and a half of yoga, meditated, and he just zonked out my canoodle.
This is what I love about Breton, is that Breton is like, you know what? I'm very zen. I'm not cursing. I don't think we should curse so much on the bus. You just whip
out. You know what? I'm sorry.
No, I think
you wanted to take my life.
Yeah. He wanted to stop you from ever skediddling ever again.
He hated me.
Yeah, he hated you. That's very upsetting. I mean, yeah. When you just kind of distill it down and like, wow, what's going on in your life that you want to run down a perfectly... Mm-hmm. attractive, gay, fabulous stranger.
Do you know how many more moments of joy I must create for people before I die in accordion music alone? But whatever. I blessed his little heart and I went on my way.
You said, you know what? Thank you, universe, for sending me this horrible person.
I was holding the latest copy of Fine Cooking magazine. It nearly went flying out of my hands onto Clinton.
What else is going on with you, Breton?
Well,
how was your Thanksgiving?
I knew we were going to talk about that because it's on my notes. Mm-hmm. I had a weird prediction.
You got it tattooed on you?
It was this tattoo.
You're like the guy from
a tattoo.
Memento.
That was the second time I had tattoo.
Yeah, that's how it's said if you're going to say it properly.
When I asked for a banana. A banana.
I'm going to get a tattoo of a banana. Please. Tattoosman.
Well, I cooked for Thanksgiving, but I cooked non-Thanksgiving related things because for no reason... Then just no reason.
Well, had like a chill Thanksgiving, right?
Chill. We stayed at a staycation, and I thought we had a couple invites. And I thought we don't feel like leaving the house.
I think it's amazing.
And Preston and myself and our friend Ash, I controlled the entire meal and put my guests to work. But it was really fun. I learned a really good lesson. We made a roast chicken with Zara once influenced me with this lovely pickled prune glaze.
Ooh,
I didn't have pickled
Zara's
prunes, so I just...
twist.
Zara's little twist. What she did was take a nice roast chicken. Or did you just spatchcock it?
No, I think it was... When I made it originally, it was roasted because it was when we used to do roast chickens at Brucey.
That's right. So Zara made a lovely roast chicken with this from Boat Street Kitchen, those little jars of stuff from that place from... Seattle, I think.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Whatever her name is, I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't
Anyway, remember. They had pickle, and she glazed the chicken with it, and I was like, Zara, what is this? Tell me.
That's
like,
when we bonded. We bonded over a prune glazed chicken,
and
course,
I just
as
said,
most
so you just
do.
Put it on? You're like, yeah, I just put it on. I'm like, but then what? And she's like, then I took it out of the oven. We're like, I just put this on. Like, that's all I did. I was like, genius, just pure genius.
I was like, Bretton, there's a line forming at the door. Please.
Yeah, nobody ever...
Get back to work.
Anyway... So I made that. I pureed some prunes and shallots in vinegar
Ooh.
To kind of mimic the flavor. Some mustard seed,
Perfect.
glazed on like the last 15 minutes of baking. Yum. So it didn't, you know, because if you put sugary stuff on the beginning of roasting a chicken, you're going to get a burn.
Yeah.
I made some creamed spinach.
Yum.
With Mornay sauce.
Yum.
I used that Jasper Hill Farms cheddar.
Yum, 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 yum,
yum.
It was
expensive and worth every,
what the hell?
Worth every mouthful.
This sounds like the most decadent and delicious roast chicken Thanksgiving
we
dinner
made a,
in the state of
nice,
Mississippi.
A nice mushroom gravy.
Oh, yum.
Mushroom gravy. And then I made those.
What kind of mushrooms?
Just regular, like brown, creamy.
Magical
and
mushrooms?
And then magical mushrooms. I haven't done those in months. and then finally, some roasted potatoes, which I'm going to tell everybody this is what happened during our dinner, is I was off on the timing. I forgot to put the chicken in.
Really?
Because, you know, you have a small oven. I actually have three racks, but I suddenly was making everything.
What?
You know,
how long did it get? How long did you forget about it for?
Like, I should have put it in 30 to 40 minutes ahead, and I just looked over, and I had it sitting at room temperature under the cabinet. So in my head, I'm like, oh my God, I forgot the bird.
Oh,
luckily,
no.
Luckily, it's a chicken.
Yeah, that cooks fast.
And I thought, well, I could spatchcock it really quickly. See, these are things when you forget something, be like,
yes,
break in half, butterfly it.
Can you explain to everyone what spatchcocking is, please?
Yeah, you basically...
You're like, an expert, aren't you?
Yeah, you basically take out the backbone, right?
Mm-hmm.
Take out the backbone. You can use a scissors to cut it out, like ripping out the spinal cord. It's very barbaric.
You just splay that thing right out.
And you splay it out and you press it and you can...
If you don't have scissors, use your teeth.
Your teeth, your fingernails, your newly minted fingernails.
Ooh.
So what did you cook? I heard you have a very...
Well, as I've been talking about for the past like 3 weeks, I did an Italian-American Thanksgiving.
And that is really...
It was really good.
Your twist on Thanksgiving.
It was Zara's little twist. I made turkey meatballs marsala that had ground prosciutto and sage inside. They were delicious.
How creative.
It was very good. I think my favorite thing, I made a garlic bread stuffing, which was delicious. We got that nice...
That was a good idea.
Italian bread that like you and I always chat about. It's like, what is this? It's like kind of like just a fluff.
We've talked about Caputo's Bakery. They make the fluffiest.
The fluffiest.
With the crispiest crust and the delicious. Most toasted sesames.
Sesame seeds. So I got that delicious bread.
Oh my God, it's heaven.
And I toasted it. And then I made like a very delicious garlic butter, like, you know, fully toasted up garlic. Just on the edge of burning, but not quite. Obviously, no one wants burnt garlic. But, you know, that really rich, deep toast.
A luscious.
Yes.
An amber toast.
An amber
garlic.
Toast.
Oh, my goodness.
And leeks and celery. And then I poured it over the toasted bread. And then I poured some vegetable stock over that because we had vegetarians, so I didn't use turkey stock or chicken stock. And then lots of pecorino cheese and chili flake and fresh
God, it keeps
parsley.
Going.
It was so delicious. It was amazing. That was my favorite. And then the turkey was great, but I kind of did the same thing that you did. You were talking about doing a double brine on your chicken. You did a wet brine.
Oh, I forgot about the double brine.
You did a wet brine and then a dry brine, correct?
I did. I told Nora Singley, who's a girl I've been working for.
Hey, Nora.
I told her yesterday, I said, I double brined it. And she just looks at me. She goes, is that really necessary? And then I said, it wasn't, but yet it was.
It was really like
she likes the dry brine.
I like a dry brine too. Although I will say, I think that dry brine is very trendy this year.
And it started a couple of years ago and it got real big.
This year, it was just so in my face. And that's one of those things where it's like, okay.
It's like when you go into Target in the suburbs and you hear moms be like, oh, did you dry brine it, Connie?
Right.
And they're like, oh, yes, Barbara, I did.
Connie.
You're like, oh gosh, Connie and Barbara.
If Connie and Barbara are doing it, you know that we've really jumped the shark with the dry brine.
Yeah. When you hear like a midtown businessman be like, oh yeah, my wife's dry brining the turkey this year, bud. Then you know it's over. I've
That's
heard that.
Really funny. So I also double brined accidentally, but it was the best thing that ever happened. So I made a vicious brine, if you will, a vicious dry brine.
Heavily seasoned, highly salted, highly sugary.
Extremely salty and sugary, and packed it because what I was thinking, and I've dry brined things many times before, but I kind of had this thought where I was
Hold
like,
on one quick thought.
Yes, please.
Let me just, in case listeners, you don't know, dry brine is you stuff a bunch of salt in the cavity and outside and you rub lots of salt in onto the bird.
Yeah.
Just salt, regular salt.
And
it's
then salt and sugar and
or sugar or
flavors.
You can just do salt.
It's flavors.
Yeah, flavors. Salt, sugar, you do whatever you want. There's different kinds of brines.
Right. And you do it, you're supposed to do it just a little bit more aggressively than you would season something. Like maybe doubly.
And then you let it dry for like 24 hours in the fridge.
Right.
Uncovered.
Correct.
A wet brine, you put all that same stuff in water and then you submerge the bird.
Houdini style. You tie it up, see if it can get out by itself.
Mine escaped on Thanksgiving. It was Houdini delicious. It was wonderful.
Okay, so, but what I did was I packed it almost like, I was like, this is interesting because I butterflied my chicken breast, my turkey breast out because I was going to make like a porchetta, right?
Butterfly. What's that song, Butterfly?
You're my butterfly, sugar, baby. Come, my lady, come my lady. You're my butterfly, sugar, baby. Oh my God.
So anyway, that's what you did.
Yes, I listened to that song on repeat and I got high and I forgot all about the turkey. And so we ordered pizza. I was doing like a porchetta style thing, like a roulade with it. And I had this idea. I used to make like a lot of different cured kind of meats at Brucey, like Lomo, for instance, which is just cured pork loin. And when you do that kind of thing, when you cure something, you really pack it in a lot of salt.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm going to take the same approach to the turkey, packing it and not just dry brining it, but really curing it. And I thought maybe I would have even smoked it.
How about that?
So when I cured it, I was like, I'm worried that it's going to be too salty maybe for this specific like purpose.
And it would get that pastrami kind of a flavor.
Yeah. So I panicked at the last minute. And then what I did was I like soaked it in water basically, which sounds insane to get some of the salt out.
Yeah, that's classic chemistry.
That's how you would get salt out of something. But what happened was that it kind of just ended up double brining because it like brined, you know what I mean? Released, like the salt came out and soaked. I did that overnight and then I took it out and I dried it for another full day and it was the most goddamn delicious thing that I've ever had in my life. It was so
it's
juicy. You
like
could squish the juice out of it like an orange.
That is incredible.
You could make turkey juice.
Now, how's that for moisture? Listen, yeah. I heard a lot of people that had a lot of successful things and that's good. It sounds like, I did run into somebody yesterday and they said, my Thanksgiving was kind of sad because my girlfriend's sister was actually very ill.
Oh no.
And she wasn't very old and actually had a very bad illness.
Oh Jesus.
So it wasn't exciting for some people. So if it wasn't, next year can be, or just to remember, I don't know. I thought about that. Like I didn't even care to celebrate Thanksgiving, but for some people, maybe
it's hard
and they don't have food. They can't just, I don't know. I thought about it.
There is a lot of pressure on the holidays. This is no like new information. Of course, we all know that the holidays can be really stressful. But not just like stressful because, you know, someone died or because you're like, oh my God, I'm frantic. But just this, like, I think it's pressure that like seeps in the air, like a dark cloud. Sometimes even when it's fun, it's like, it's everything.
There's
right?
a lot of energy going around.
It's energy.
There's a lot of expectation.
It's energy. It's expectation.
Expectation.
And it's also nostalgia, which I think even when the nostalgia is positive, like I think about a lot of the times, like on Thanksgiving, I got very depressed for a couple hours because I was thinking about
I got depressed once. It was 4 minutes and then I quickly made a cocktail.
I got very depressed for 30 seconds.
Oh my God, it was horrible.
I couldn't even believe what was happening. I was like, snap out of it, Tangor. Yeah. So, but no, I got bummed out because I was thinking about all the great times that happened in the past and, you know, being a little kid and like, you know, the first time I remember like actually knowing that I wanted to be a cook was on Thanksgiving because I was like running around the kitchen with my mom
fast.
Oh,
wonderful, yeah.
But it made me so sad because I'm like, those times are done and I'm almost dead now.
Yeah, it can't
be. You know,
and
everyone's going to die and Donald Trump's president and everything sucks. And then I, you know, just started chugging a bottle of tequila.
Now this is where I come in because I do feel those things on a minute by minute basis every day, 365 days a year, going on 41 years every day of my life, every second of my waking hour in my dreams. I can't escape those thoughts. But what I do is to combat that, I think of all the fabulous things. Like I'm already getting excited about the holidays because there's croquembouches and
oh my God,
I've been like
a croaking motherfucking bouche.
All the holiday magazines are coming out. I'm holding in my hands here.
Yes,
I have a Bon Appetit, which is pictured that has straw.
Is that a rugula on the front?
A rugula on the front.
Us Jews like that.
The Jews are very
holler, Bobby.
They are bringing back and making everybody. When I first moved to New York, a lot of people didn't know what rugula is. I mean, they knew, but it wasn't as in your face.
They thought it was a like.
And
a,
I remember I was excited to make it, and I was like, "Oh, I need to get pot cheese or something." It's like it's kind of like cottage cheese.
Yes.
Nobody had it except for that place, the East Village Cheese Shop.
Oh, really?
I think they would have it sometimes. Okay, they're closed now.
Don't go there. Hello, East Village Cheese Shop.
Okay, so one other thing before we get started is
let's
that
hear it. What is
I
it?
Have
what is it?
A very fabulous entrevue, we'll call it, into Bonnie Slotnick Cookbooks the other day.
I was going to ask you about this because
okay,
I saw this on your
listen,
Instagram.
I'm about to do it today, and by the time this episode is out and recorded, which will be very short, so you'll be this is very very modern, very
hot off the presses.
Hot off the press, exactly. Very in the moment, if you will. So Bonnie Slotnick downstairs, she has that fabulous vintage cookbook shop.
And Bonnie Slotnick is, I mean, I know who she is, but just
she
explain.
Has, yeah, she has a wonderful old cookbook shop. I think she's been in business for something like 28 years. She used to be in the West Village in a cute little brownstone. Florence Fabricant wrote an article about her in 1997 or something. And like
oh,
it came
Florence.
Out the day like before Thanksgiving, which kind of like boosted her success as a second-hand bookstore owner.
Yeah.
Which is a dying breed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And she got evicted. She has the, she's awesome.
We need to do a
and
podcast on
she,
Bonnie
anyway,
Slotnick.
So Bonnie Slotnick, she's fabulous. And I go downstairs and I see this little piece of paper with some, you know, it says, oh, look at all these items for sale. Brioche molds, barquettes, tart molds, pans, vintage James Beard cookbooks, all this thing. And it was like a list to print out. And I'm
oh
like,
oh my God.
You know, ask Bonnie for contact info. So of course I'm like, Bonnie, and I've been really broke the last year, so I haven't really been buying a lot of stuff, but I always go there.
Yeah.
I'll buy like a magazine.
I don't feel like being broke stops you from having the most fabulous life.
No, never.
Of anyone that I've ever met, ever.
So anyway, so Bonnie gives me her name. Her name's Sandy. She grew up in Brooklyn.
Okay.
And she's getting kicked out of her rent-controlled apartment after 25 years.
Tragedy.
And she's had a family, and she's getting rid of all the stuff. I talked to her, and she has tons of stuff, and I'm going there today.
Excuse me?
To sift through.
Oh, I guess
her
my
apartment.
Invitation got lost in,
no,
the,
listen,
in the snail mail.
When I had to work up her trust to get,
because
I was like, why don't I just come to your apartment? Because she said, well, I could meet you at Bonnie's. And I'm like, I want to see the entire collection.
Oh,
and
God.
I want to offer you everything. And so
that's
anyway.
Amazing. Could you, we maybe go in one of those very long coats where like
yes,
one person goes on top and you're like, hello, I'm Brett. And I forgot to mention I'm a giant.
I'm a centaur. Please don't judge
we'll
me for being a centaur.
We'll go in one of the horse costumes
yeah.
where you're the front. Hello, I'm Brett. And I'm sorry, I forgot to mention I'm actually a horse.
Didn't Bonnie tell you?
Didn't Bonnie mention that I'm
a equestrian?
I could
prove it to you, but I don't want to do anything inappropriate. Wink, wink. All right, listen, let's get
that's
down
awesome.
To brass taxes.
Let's do
here.
It. I'm right down. I'm
brass.
Right down
listen,
for
everybody,
it.
When I think of the holidays,
you think of brass?
I think of two things. I think of smoking cigarettes and getting passed out drunk at my grandmother fighting with my father. And then the second thing is cookies.
I think of pogo sticks.
Oh my God. Oh, I had a pogo stick once.
I got a pogo stick like every year growing up from my dad for Christmas. And I had like a collection of them. And I'm like, these are super dangerous. I have no interest in jumping on this. And like, don't you remember that I got this last year, Santa?
Yeah.
The answer was no. So now somebody has like a collection of vintage pogo sticks.
Don't you wish you still had that now?
Not really. I would definitely get hurt. I'm very clumsy.
I was more of like a pogo ball kind of guy.
Oh, a pogo ball.
I've just dated myself. But
yeah,
like,
the pogo ball thing.
A pogo ball.
So the thing that like looked like Saturn kind of, right?
Yeah, yeah. It looked like a Saturn, like a planet. It was very good for your core.
Dude.
And you had to squeeze your thighs together as if you had a thigh master in the air.
Yeah.
And then squeeze your feet on this ball with a platform and jump.
Those were great. Do you remember a pogo stick was very dangerous
oh,
for
I
anyone
yeah,
with
yeah.
a penis and balls? That is
anybody,
seems like a
girl with
or
a
vagina.
A vagina with
yeah.
like a
anyone with
the
a crotch is was a pogo stick was a
pogo
big
stick
problem
right between a woman's legs.
Really big problem. But do you remember the thing? They were called moon shoes and they were like made by Nickelodeon and they were like two giant, there were like two mini trampolines for each foot.
No, I don't know those.
I'm getting them for you.
Oh my gosh.
It was
I
like
must
having an individual
them.
Trampoline on each foot, and you would like walk around. I was like, this is what it's like being on the moon.
Okay, then they had that at Crunch, I think. They
really?
Like, yeah, they had like some kind of moon boot workout.
Oh, really? I must join.
No, in all honesty, folks, we're talking
okay.
here about cookies.
Oh, cookies.
Would you like me to tell you?
Oh my
Let's
God.
Just talk about like categories of cookies.
I would love to do nothing more right now than sit and talk about cookies.
All right. Well, it is the holidays and we should all be thinking very intently about what type of cookies we'd like to make for ourselves and our friends.
Yeah.
So I'm going to inspire you with just a few different kinds. There's...
Lay it on me.
Bar cookies, drop cookies, rolled cookies, refrigerator cookies, molded cookies, pressed cookies, meringue cookies, confections. There's pie bar desserts, ready-made cookies. And then, of course, there's puzzles, biscotti. Oh. There's to think of the different cultures, there's pfeffernusses.
Oh my God.
I mean...
I'm sorry. I'm just so overwhelmed. I threw up.
Persian cookies. There's Turkish delights. There's...
Wait, just a goddamn minute here. Is Turkish Delight really a cookie? That's more of a candy. Let's not get crazy here, Brendan.
Why are you trying to ruin my flow?
I'm just saying.
Okay, anyway. Moon cookies, space cookies, weed cookies, edible cookies,
dog cookies, cat cookies. Cookies,
yeah. Canary cookies.
Cookies, like the thing that when you go on a website in another country, it's like... Do you agree to these cookies?
What the hell
is that? First of all, I've been agreeing to using cookies for a long time. And
like,
I'm
would you like to use four cookies? Yes, yeah, I would.
Of course, I need to see
they're
what
they're pecan like chocolate. Oh, here, I have brought some cookies.
Oh my God, this is amazing! What kind?
I brought some cookies. I made some pecan shortbread cookies. They're chocolate.
What the hell?
And I dusted them with caramel shards.
Oh my God!
So they're it's like a kind of like a pecan pie filling,
This is the most delicious thing.
It needs a glass of milk.
It does.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any.
It tastes like a candy.
This is amazing. And you know me, I don't really eat sugar anymore, so this is a real treat.
I don't eat sugar that much. I make it, but... Okay.
Oh my God.
So that recipe came from Dori Greenspan's cookie cookbook called Dori's Cookies. And it's called chocolate pecan
pie
cookie bars. So that was what I did this week, as well as research all different types of cookies. And I don't know if you know this. Listen to our smacking.
I'm sorry, but I have to describe what I just ate.
Oh my God, you just ate the whole thing.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Oh, that's a good sign. Usually you take a bite.
No, that was like beyond.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Zara just had sex in front of me with a cookie. Zara.
I'm sorry. I'm like,
well, she has her clothes on.
There's like drool squirting out of my mouth. And other places.
This is so Lars von Trier right now.
Okay, so Breton just made a cookie and a delicious shortbread crust, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like a shortbread.
Mm-hmm.
A pecan pie type filling, pecans on like chocolate
some golden
melty
syrup.
It was
golden
delicious
syrup eggs.
It was salty. Oh my God.
And I made those caramel shards, and
holy
you make
shit.
A big thing of caramel, you pour it on some parchment, you break it in a million pieces, and then you can sprinkle that over your brownies or blah blah blah, and you
bake it.
It was
the best thing I ever ate, honestly. It was up there. Yeah, that was really up there.
Well, I was looking at cookies, and Sarah, were you going to tell us a little bit about the history of the cookie?
Well, I have a story about the history of the chocolate chip cookie.
I'd like you...
You want me to hear it?
Well, I'd like to hear some history before I get into cookie science. And
okay, perfect. So I'll just tell you my story then. So I think that when I think about cookies, the first cookie that comes to mind, of course, isn't the chocolate chip cookie the most famous cookie in America, at
least?
It is. And it's an American cookie, which I just figure everything was always invented somewhere else. But it is 100% an American cookie. And it was invented by a woman named Ruth Graves Wakefield in the year 1938 at her restaurant, which was called the Toll House Inn.
That's a very, very cute name.
It's the cutest name.
The Toll House Inn?
Everything about this story is incredible. So Ruth Graves Wakefield was born in the year 1903. And her husband opened the Toll House Inn in 1930. And it was in...
Where?
Whitman, Massachusetts.
Whitman. That's my kitty's name.
Whitman has a kitty named Whitman. It was in Whitman, Massachusetts. So before they opened... the Toll House, and she had attended the Farmingham State Normal School Department of Household Arts in 1924. And she worked as a registered dietitian and lectured all over on food. So this woman was not only a cook and a baker, but she was very, very highly educated.
She was into everything.
Into
about
food.
It.
She was into properly setting the table. She was into service. She knew all about how to, as a dietitian, she knew how the body worked, how food worked. She, I'll tell you a little bit more about this cookbook in a little bit.
I'm already getting inspired.
The cookbook is the most comprehensive book I've ever read, ever.
Okay.
So just, I want to set the stage for you.
I'm here.
She was brilliant, okay? She was a woman. She was a force to be reckoned with. She loved food. Think Martha. Think Julia. anyone that we like respect nowadays.
That she had more time because she wasn't in front of the camera all the time.
Right. And she
was just into it.
She just like loved food. So they opened this place between, it's in Whitman, Massachusetts, on the road between Boston and Cape Cod.
This is already just sounding like an East Coast fairy perfect. Tale.
Some of her most like famous clientele was the whole Kennedy family.
Of course.
Joseph Kennedy Sr., said to drop by frequently for Boston cream pie. JFK loved the Mary Jane gingerbread. And then she published a book in 1930, which was before they opened the Toll House, and which was called Ruth Wakefield's Recipes Tried and True. Which is...
That is really nice.
Amazing. Okay, so Duncan Hines also was a regular at the Toll House.
Oh, that's right.
Duncan Hines of Duncan Hines fame, who you told us in our KFC episode...
KFC?
...was the guy who discovered Colonel Sanders. He used to be basically a food critic, like before he had the cake mix.
Yeah, you should go listen to that episode again. I think I talked about how he traveled around in a car or something. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So anyway, so she's at the Toll House Inn... They have incredible food. I mean, I was reading through the cookbook and it's just unbelievable. Like some of these dishes just are, you know, there's a lot of dishes from that time in history that sound just like funny and weird, mm-hmm. But then you're like, ooh, this is probably disgusting. But reading through her recipes, like they sounded delicious, like really
like
amazing.
Cottage egg pudding.
Yeah. And she also gave all these recommendations. I'll save this kind of for the end, but recommendations on how to serve things, what to serve with what. It was just really like super, super, super comprehensive. It was amazing.
I need you to put a link for all of
I'm
us
going to
about the because you said you can find the cookbook is very
I
expensive.
Read the cookbook online.
Yep.
I read through the whole cookbook online. So this is where things get really crazy for Ruth.
I knew there was a
Graves.
Turn in the story.
So
yes.
I'm as we've set the stage, brilliant woman, force to be reckoned with, cookie maven, baking woman, baker extraordinaire.
And she couldn't even vote yet, right?
I don't know. Did women's I don't know. Oh. That's too much information. Well, I don't know, Breton. Wait, women can vote?
No,
I'm
they
so
can't
confused.
Yet, silly.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, I was told that women can't vote, so I've just been sitting home and baking chocolate chip cookies every election day.
Yeah, is that funny?
So on the Nestle Toll House page, by the way, Nestle like got the rights later on. Nestle didn't invent Toll House cookies, as I'm about to explain. She did. But they describe how she came upon the recipe as an accident, which after everything I've just explained to you about what a brilliant woman this is, how can we possibly think that creating the most iconic cookie of all time is an accident?
An accident. Well, you know.
So the creation myth that they have said that she chopped up some chocolate and added it to cookie dough as a shortcut because she thought she could use it to make chocolate cookies. Now, this woman is clearly a borderline food scientist and an amazing cook. There's no way she thought that just by adding some crumbled chocolate, all of a sudden she was going to get a chocolate cookie. She already had recipes for chocolate cookies in her cookbook.
Yeah.
This was on purpose. And then a former chef at the Toll House Inn claimed it was actually his doing. He said that while they were making a giant batch of cookie dough in a big mixer, the vibrations of the mixer caused the bars of chocolate to accidentally fall in the dough. Now, again, bear in mind.
They didn't have foil on them?
Right. That means that they would have had to be unwrapped, sitting so close to the edge of the mixer that they accidentally just fell in.
Can you imagine all the things that must have fallen into those big mixers?
I mean, rats and,
mice back then.
Long winter underwear, candlesticks,
vomit,
yeah,
from like
dysentery.
The workers, like getting
what other old things, stale bread,
all
chicken legs,
yeah, rings.
And that is how Christina, how do you pronounce her last name?
Who,
Christina Tosi from Milk Bar?
Oh, I don't know, Christine Tosi.
I never like knew how to pronounce that name. I'm very bad at pronunciation, and that is how I ruined my joke about how she came up with her compost cookies. Okay, so anyway, there's no way that that could have possibly happened, and it's just another man taking credit for a woman who is clearly like has created something really amazing, and everyone trying to discredit her and say, "Oh, mm-hmm. it must have been a mistake. She must have not known what she's doing." There's no way that this like incredibly talented, skilled baker could possibly have come up with this amazing recipe. So all along the way, people are just tearing her down, trying to say that she didn't know what she was doing, that it was just a mistake, which is just so fucking infuriating. Years later, in an interview on the cookie's anniversary, she said to a reporter that she was thinking about a new cookie to serve up and came up with an idea she wanted to try involving butterscotch, nut wafers, and bits of chocolate. And that's where the idea came from. And so...
Nut wafers.
She said that she meant to do it. And so I believe her, not a bunch of people who are trying to say, oh, and then... whoopsie-doo, all of a sudden something fell and then we had chocolate chip cookies. She thought it out. It was a good recipe. So people started asking for the recipe and she would give it to them because she didn't think it was like that big of a deal.
Did she only sell them at the Toll House in Richmond?
Yeah, and she didn't think it was like a big deal. It wasn't like, she had no idea that this was going to be some big giant thing. She just thought that, I invented a cookie. But it went crazy. So
cookie
people
monsters.
People loved them. They started asking for the recipe. In 1939, the Toll House cookie was featured on Betty Crocker's famous radio show called Famous Foods from Famous Places.
Famous foods from famous places, from famous chefs, from famous people.
Famous, fabulous lifestyles. And that's where Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous came from.
Demand a fabulous lifestyle. That's just how I look at life.
Do you remember that show, Lifestyles of Rich and Famous?
Yeah, of course, Robin Leach.
Robin Leach was 80 when we were kids, and he's now 70. I don't know what's going on with him.
Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous with Robin Leach.
What the hell is he doing? We need to get... Robin Leach, you're listening, we have cookies here for you.
Yes.
We're famous. We're not rich. We're fabulous, and we'd like to be featured on the show.
Okay, so...
Hang on, there's more.
Wait, there's more. Okay.
So this is how it spreads. This is how the cookie virus spreads.
Cookie virus spreads.
New England to the rest of the country.
Would you like to accept these cookies? I would.
Somebody sneezed and then they caught the cookie virus. So Nestle got the rights to Toll House in 1939. They started to sell semi-sweet chocolate bars with like little cutouts in them. So you could chip it off.
Ruth, you are
smart. And then
in
1940, they started doing the morsels. Now, along comes the Great Depression, and it's kind of considered like extravagant to make cookies. So then
you should be making wartime biscuits, not
happening.
Cookies. Yes.
Right. However, Nestle starts marketing this to be like, okay, well, this will solve all your marital and social problems. So it's actually okay to be making cookies. Plus, with World War II, they had another marketing campaign where they're like, you need to send cookies off to your loved ones, your husbands and fathers and brothers. This is the ultimate way of showing that they said, baking Toll House cookies to win the war, it's your patriotic duty.
Absolutely.
So they kind of got past it being an extravagance. A lot of the men, a lot of the soldiers were said to have eaten Toll House cookies and chocolate chip cookies in general for the first time when they were overseas in the barracks.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, like they'd never had them here.
What kind of nostalgia would the cookie bring now? Good or bad? Probably good.
Like, I think still good.
Like somebody sent you a package
of course.
Across the seas.
100%.
In a ship and it still
made it. Does that
even
happen anymore? Like, it sounds crazy. They tasted them for the first time in the the canteens. And then, so anyway, that's how it kind of became like this big thing. And then they also marketed it to women post-war and post-depression who, before the Depression, these women had people who were cooking in their house. And then after the Depression, a lot of people lost like servants and they had to like learn how to cook for themselves.
They printed
the recipe on the back of the bag. This was kind of like a new thing.
Yeah.
So that women could learn to be good homemakers. And like some of the first things that a lot of these women post-depression or in the depression learned to make
riches to rags.
Yeah.
And people had
and people who weren't necessarily in rags, but they weren't as rich as they used to be.
Yeah. No more. You got to rent out that subfloor with the extra kitchen now.
Exactly. And so, you know, their husband had just jumped out the window of the New York Stock Exchange and they had to learn how to bake cookies to
solve all
their problems.
I lost my house in Bridgehampton. It was horrible. we were relegated to the West Village in our two...
Oh, it was a disaster. they sold the inn in 1966, the Wakefields, and Nestle changed the recipe in 1979. And the recipe they have now, the cookies are 6 times the size of what they used to be. They were like very tiny.
My grandmother on my mother's side used to make Carmela. Her name was. She used to make very tiny cookies.
Yeah, they were supposed to be very tiny. And the original recipe is actually very interesting. It involves like warm boiling water that you put like baking soda into to diffuse it, or I don't know what, that's not the right word, but and
hot water with baking
soda. So the Toll House restaurant on New Year's Eve 1984 had about 250 occupants for a New Year's party. This is after it had been sold, and then a fire erupted at about 11:30, and the 276-year-old building that used to house the Toll House in burned to the ground.
That is insane.
Yeah.
Kind of ends in...
I know. So it's a pretty interesting high and low story, because...
Well, this one, Ruth Wakefield, sounds...
She was brilliant.
Brilliant, yeah.
She was brilliant. Brenton, you would be...
How come her name isn't more out there?
That's what I'm saying. She's kind of a forgotten hero and has created what I would say is arguably one of the top five, if not top three, iconic American dishes. I mean, how often... Is something as like iconic as the chocolate chip cookie
the Toll
ever
House
gonna be invented
cookie.
Again?
It's
never.
Almost an adjective, like, oh my god, he's so Toll House.
Oh my god, what a TH. What a schnorr.
I'm going Toll House today. What do you think? There's so many ways to
Yeah. We should.
You know what? Today I promise to everybody during this holiday season I'm gonna be a little more Toll House. And that just means like old fashioned.
Yeah, it's like a little less country and a little more rock and roll. Or a little more country and a little less rock and roll.
I was gonna say a little bit more Rockefeller.
Yes, a little more Rockefeller, a little less rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she was really cool. So this book had like, I mean, you have to read it. You'll die. So not only does it have recipes and like guidelines for, you know, setting the table and proper service, it has cures to basically every known ailment that could possibly happen, from a paper cut to a snake bite to dysentery in
what?
The book, because any of these things could potentially happen to you when you're cooking, I guess. So there's like,
well,
there's a constipation, broken ankle.
Sorry,
headache,
think of all the things that we've
PMS.
Done when we're cooking.
I know, exactly.
A severe, horrible depression. Mm-hmm. crippling anxiety.
Crippling anxiety. No, but seriously, and it gives you the cure for all of those things.
I wanted to...
It's amazing.
That is crazy, because yeah. I was thinking about crippling anxiety of the kitchen.
And?
No, like, I bet she had a cure for it. She probably
absolutely.
I bet she mentioned it one time. Like, one must remain confident and ready for mistakes in the kitchen and ready for solutions.
There was a solution in this book. I do not know how this is not our Bible, like even we're, more so than Mastering
if
the
anybody
French
has
cooking.
Even a reprint copy, will you please send it to Life's a Banquet Show at
yeah.
gmail.com.
I mean, you can get the paperback, but it just, I think I'm going to hold out. You can get like a original copy for like $150. I think I'm going to buy it, because it is seriously the most incredible cookbook that I've ever seen. And she was the most incredible woman. And Ruth Graves Wakefield, I know you're dead, but we need to give you some serious credit, because
yeah.
anyone
thanks
who's
for paving the way, girl.
Paving the way. And anyone who has the audacity, this is just a thing about like women in general. It's, you know, very difficult being female for a lot of reasons. And one of them is that you don't get proper credit. Sometimes people are like, oh, sweetie, what a cute thing you did. Oh, look at her. She made a mistake. Actually, that's so fucking insulting.
Like, oh, look, you can do it too. You're
yeah.
a girl.
How insulting.
I'm so surprised you could be a motorcycle mechanic.
Oh, shocking.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Wow, even that.
Yeah.
Even when you're surprised to hear a girl be like, yeah, I rebuilt an engine. We're always
right.
like, you do?
Yeah.
Like, why would a girl ever...
You listen to rap music? Oh my god, you
wow.
can write, you can, yeah, wire
well.
Chandelier. You can do anything, women out there. You can do anything. You can create anything.
Can do
and
anything.
We believe you. We believe you.
We believe you from the deep kitty of
yeah.
your kittens.
Anyway, that was my story.
Well, she's fab.
Fab.
I need to.
Beyond.
I'm going to spend all day obsessing about her.
I asked Bonnie Slatnick about her.
I'm going to go. I probably will stop by yeah. Bonnie's later. Speaking of Bonnie's, so
you did some research.
I did some research. I did a lot of cookie research, and you know, I did bake one or two different kinds of cookies, and I was going to bake pizzelles today. But number one, I thought it was a little bit early for the flavor.
Pizzelles.
So I wanted to go through you with some of my favorite cookies to make.
Please.
That I think that are pretty easy.
Okay.
A couple of my favorites are that sort of scream holidays are, for example, this pecan bar.
I can't even with this
and
pecan bar.
And again, this
so
is
good.
A Dory Greenspan recipe.
Oh,
so you can definitely look. I don't want to.
Adorable Dory Greenspan.
We can send links to recipes if you go ahead and email us. We'll tell you everything. A personal story with a feather, written with a feather pen on a trackpad and an eye mouse. But it'll be a feather. And I'll wear a hat of sorts. I will sit at my writer's secretary desk with a candle burning. And then, okay, so snickerdoodles.
Yum.
Love a snickerdoodle. Okay, so I was looking at snickerdoodles. Snickerdoodle.
I was looking up snickerdoodles. Snickerdoodles. I was looking up snickerdoodles.
And okay, so the snickerdoodle used to be called a lot of different things. Hold on 1 second. The snickerdoodles were also called Jolly Boys, Brambles, Tangles, Breeches, Kinkawoodles.
Excuse me?
Graham Jenks.
Kinkawoodles?
Kinkawoodles, Plunkets, or Crybabies.
Whoa.
I mean, this, so we finally, as society progresses and we become more civilized.
Yeah.
As you can tell.
Who called them kinkerdoodles, the cavemen?
As you can tell by our current president, we have reached a pinnacle of civilization in the United States. And we have decided on snickerdoodles as a unified cookie, which is basically a cinnamon, it's like a cinnamon sugar cookie.
It's a cinnamon sugar cookie.
And it always kind of has cream of tartar in, which gives it that.
It does?
Yeah. It's kind of.
What does the cream of tartar do for the kinkermookle?
I don't know. It makes it.
The moose knuckle?
It gives it that special flavor. That really? Alkalized, like, tangy
flavor. That
kind
of tangy flavor.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about Chinese baking soda, which is baked baking soda.
Oh.
It's like a stronger baking soda.
I didn't know that.
It's like between baking soda and lye.
Really? Oh. Perfect.
Yeah. Just rub some on your skin and see what happens.
Just for anyone who wants to really spice up their cookies this year and kill all their loved ones,
no,
just
once
add lye.
Once it's baked, it's safe. That's the whole point.
Okay, we tried to make pretzels once. Not once. We actually made pretzels at Brucey.
Okay, good. You're getting to my next
topic. We got commissioned for some unknown reason from a lovely friend, actually, I remember, gave us the job, which I thought was very sweet, but... You know, baking perfect, gorgeous things was not our specialty. So someone asked us to bake them a giant peace sign shaped pretzel.
Okay.
Soft pretzel.
So you decided to say go for it.
And we said, sure. And it came out so ugly. And we had like lye in the restaurant. And Jenny, who used to be Jenny Lupo, who's our good friend, used to be the chef de cuisine at Brucey, is outside wearing a gas mask and like full gloves, like spreading lye on this thing.
Yeah, you
and
have
then we kind
to.
Of figured out we got a good recipe. I'm like, there's no way I'm keeping lye in this restaurant because anyone who's ever worked in a restaurant, in a busy, busy restaurant, has
you
lots of stuff downstairs.
You might grab the baking soda.
And had prep cooks who do all kinds of weird things. Like we used to have a guy.
Hey man, what's lye? I don't know. It's like, I think it's like baking soda.
Exactly. Like we used to, this is now a deep tangent, but we used to make all kinds of flavored butters. And one of our prep cooks, you know, we used to make coffee butter a lot. Or no, miso butter. And we had to go with our fresh baked bread. And one of our prep cooks one time, I'm like, what is the flavor in this miso butter? I mean, it's good, but it's very different. And I go downstairs, he goes, oh yeah, that's banana tangora. And I'm like, you just threw a fucking banana in this miso butter, like,
banana
and didn't tell me. Like, I have to give a menu meeting. Like, someone could be allergic to banana. So when I used that line of logic, I was like, "There's no way we can keep lye in this restaurant because someone will be like, I just put some lye in it. I thought it would be good, and then everyone dies.
Some extra spices.
Yeah.
Okay. So snickerdoodles.
Yes.
And then,
sorry, Snicker.
No,
of
but
course.
Speaking of pretzels, you just led me to my next thing, which is I love.
We
either,
share one
like,
mind.
White yogurt or white chocolate. Covered pretzels.
It's my
and
favorite thing.
You can, if you wanted to spice and if you want to make those, you know, you put it over like a drying rack over a sheet pan, and you can lay it all over that melted white chocolate fondue.
Oh my god!
When they say yogurt, I think they just mean like commercialized white chocolate.
I need to know. Actually, anyone out there, please let us know. Obviously, we could just Google it, but we're way too busy with our yachting and our boating and our rich and Robin Leach.
My Uber X is outside. I'm gonna leave soon.
If anyone knows what the deal is with that yogurt stuff, that on a yogurt covered pretzel,
well,
please. What is it?
Yeah, it's a like a fake white chocolate. It's okay, so I love that. And you could put some colored sprinkles over it. And, or you could even do colored salt. Because you want that like salty.
That's perfect.
That's the best thing about those white chocolate pretzels, the sweet salty combination.
Oh my God, like black salt that would be cool.
Which brings me to my next and favorite thing, which is pizzelles. And it's because I'm, you know, I got some Italian American.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell everyone what a pizzelle is?
Pizzelles,
I also love a pizzelle.
Like a egg white sugar cookie that... Very unleavened, and you cook it in an iron, a pizzelle iron, which can be electric. You can put it over the stovetop. Originally, this is very fascinating.
Tell us.
Is that something like in Abruzzo, there used to be this town that there were so many snakes in that the people lived a very fearful life.
Oh my God, a town full of snakes?
Yes, and they were getting constantly killed and bitten by snakes and strangled.
What in the hell are you saying?
So there was some... I don't know, like apparently one day they said, kill the snakes and wear it around your neck and then that'll ward off the other snakes.
That makes
so apparently
sense.
They put
That's
some
very tight
there
logic.
Was some saint or some kind of like app, you know, monk or something that like, you know, did this and then like saved the whole town. And so since then, the tradition is to make lots of puzzles for this snake god.
Oh, the snake king. Lord Snakington, of course.
Lord Snakington, yes.
Whoa,
exactly.
That is
I didn't
the weirdest story.
I didn't know that at all.
Well, now everybody knows it, and thank God for it, because anyway, that is an interesting, that's a fun party
so
fact.
So I have a pezzale maker that you can put over the stove. Cool. I got it on eBay for $6.
That's
this
great.
Is years ago. The prices have gone up, but if you go to an antique store or a secondhand thrift shop, you can often go in the back and find one of those little irons.
That's
you gotta
awesome.
Dig and sift, but they kind of look like those long camping irons where you like mm-hmm. it's a griddle, has like a wooden end. They're fabulous. I highly recommend them.
Yeah, I need to get one.
So snickerdoodles, pretzels, and then I think the other thing, oh, this is my favorite one, hazelnut anise cookies. I know there's a lot of anise and a lot of anise in my recipes, but
well, I mean, look who we're talking to.
Who doesn't love fresh anise?
I love a
and then push record. Oh, now it's recording. Okay. Perfect.
Okay. We're back.
Hey, back.
Oh my gosh, we had a Cookie Monster attack quickly.
Oh my
no
God.
Big deal. Everyone's fine.
So we were talking about pezzale.
Then we're talking about snickerdoodles. Forgive us if we don't know.
And I finally wanted to tell you my favorite cookie, and I was talking about anises.
Oh, yes. How could we forget anises?
Only once a year around Christmas.
But
okay, so
year.
I have this wonderful, it's one of those rolled icebox cookie cake, you know, where you make make it in the food processor.
Yeah.
You roll it into a tube.
A log.
You roll it into a long
a
tube.
A thick, long, tubey log.
I like to have mine 8 to 9 inches.
Perfect.
It should have a good girth because
yes.
you want to make sure those cookies...
Just so you can barely squeeze your fingers together around
mm-hmm.
it.
There should be a small space between the thumb and the forefinger mm-hmm. Of your left hand.
Yes.
Now, those are simply
Bretton Scott's Guide to Cookies.
Those are toasted hazelnuts, some flour, some anise seed, and some butter.
Macho.
And, yeah, so what you want to do is you want to put those in the refrigerator, and you want to roll them up, and then you want to take them out, and those are great because you can actually bring those to somebody's house.
Oh,
right?
Like unbaked, you mean?
Mm-hmm. You could bring them unbaked.
Bring the roll.
And then you could just say like, hey, let's slice up a roll. That's mm-hmm. what cookies are. That's what cookie dough is in the
yeah.
supermarket.
That's what buds do. They slice up a roll together, bros.
Yeah. Hey, bro, you want to stick that in? I got to like cool 350, man. Got the baking steel in the oven. Don't worry, I got a baking steel in the bottom too. Yo, bro, you know what the hell is going on.
Oh, and I also got this soft butter over here.
Dude, you got convection on, bro? Yeah, just turn it off, but I like convection for like the last 4 minutes. So that's a great recipe. Those will all be posted on a picture of our Instagram of me walling about in the kitchen. I do apologize for lack of video and everything. My iPhone has been broken.
Unbelievable.
At Apple, my iPhone has been broken for a long time. I finally called the insurance company. I was about to splurge and buy a brand new phone.
Mm-hmm.
And I called and they just said, we'll just give you a new one. I just wished my luck upon, and there I was just thrust upon.
So you got a brand new iPhone 3?
Yeah, and I'm going to, for those of you that don't live in New York anymore or don't live in New York and like to hear the horrendous stories, I'm going to finish my little part of the story with how I got my iPhone back, which is how I'm going to start making more videos, which is like it all ties together.
Amazing.
And you'll see me making my cookie videos. My iPhone got delivered via FedEx. It was 24 hours and overnight shipping. I got mm-hmm. home last night from work. I did some food styling for a fabulous magazine.
Of course
we
did.
We made kids food. It was the studio was overlooking the Hudson. It was gorgeous. Undisclosed location. And anyway, so I get back and I'm like, oh my gosh, I missed my delivery. They said no signature required from FedEx. And it says, go to after 6 p.m., go to this location in Brooklyn. It's out in like south, who knows where, like south slope, right? On the water.
Oh my God.
So
like an industry setting?
Industry, well, closer.
Okay.
So it's this very desolate, warehousey part of Brooklyn. I take the train. It's freezing. I leave with fingerless gloves and it got down to like 25.
It was cold last night.
It was freezing.
Were there creeps
windy.
And sneaks and ghouls all around?
So I had to walk 20 minutes exactly. And I go down this like crazy, like I'm in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Crossing under highways and bridges and desolate corners. And the wind is bustling and all I have.
Trash can fires.
And I get there. I was like, oh, here I am. The FedEx location was very nice. There was no line. And I go and I said,
of course
sir.
Not.
He's like, hey, give
nowhere.
Me. He's like, yeah, give me a ticket. I give him my ticket and he says, no, it's not back yet. The truck's supposed to be back. It's like 7 o'clock. So listen. So I decided, I'm like, he's like, you can wait. But if the truck doesn't get back and we close at 8:30, then we're still not going to give it to you. Even if the truck comes back. Okay. I call FedEx. I'm like, let's get this. Maybe they can go. I go back. I walk toward the train another 17 minutes back. I hop on a city bike. one of those electric assist ones. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to give it one more try. Since I have an electric city bike, I zoom back. It was very quick and very windy. And I go in and the guy's like, oh, good luck. Your package is here. And I'm like, I knew it. It was addressed to Preston Rasmussen.
Uh-huh.
And my idea.
Who the hell is that?
It's my boyfriend. And he wouldn't give it to me. And so we argued there. And I said, listen, I live with him. He's my domestic partner. And this is my address. And I need this. He's like, you're not getting it.
Gay discrimination.
He's like, there's a phone inside and I can't give it to you. And I said, how would I have the sticker for my door, my identification, and I know that it's also mailed to Preston Rasmussen? I said, give me my package. He's like, you're not getting your package tonight. And I said,
sounds like the beginning of a porno.
And I go, I'm getting my package tonight. I go, I just biked back through the freezing cold, blustering winds, and I walked back here with my ticket. I go, sir, I am not leaving here until you give me my iPhone, which is rightfully mine. And he's like, you're not getting it. And I go, we'll see about that. I call FedEx, and I call them the 1-800 number, and I'm like, I'm in front. This guy won't give me my package. He said, if you have your address, proof of address, he has to give it to you. And I'm like, listen, and I could only talk with my earbuds
because
my phone's broken.
Because your phone's broken.
And he's like, she says, let me talk to this guy right now. And so I give him the earbuds and he's like, I don't want to put your dirty earbuds in my ear.
I can't blame him for
and
that.
And I said, well, then you need to listen or give me my package. She's like, you know what? I'll just give you your package. I'm like, he ended up giving me my package because he didn't want gay earbuds in his fucking ear.
Yeah, he didn't want your gay earwax.
Well, guess what? I got the package. And then so when he gave it to me, he signed over, I go, sir, I was like, thank you so much. I knew I was going to leave with my package tonight. I was such a little...
Did you guys have sex?
No, and I said, thank you very much. I said, you have a fabulous holiday weekend. And he goes, yeah, yeah, you too. And I was like...
Oh, wow.
And I walked out the door and I was like, I won. And I got my phone.
That's amazing.
So videos.
Cookie videos gotta watch out coming for up.
Yeah, so...
You got to watch out for the bureaucracy.
So, Zara,
tell
me about your favorite cookies.
Oh, man. I don't know how much time you got. Well, my favorite cookies. Are we going to do top three?
Yeah, let's do top three.
Okay, great.
What's your favorite top three cookies?
My top three favorite cookies. Are we doing top three favorite kinds of cookies or favorite cookies from a specific place?
That can be up to your little old brain to decide.
Okay, fine. My brain is little and old. Also, that is...
I was going to say, really, it's like, that's for your little bird brain to decide. It turned into a nasty person at that FedEx thing.
Mean Breton.
Sorry. I didn't mean... I meant reptile brain.
Perfect.
And by reptile, I meant your gut visceral reaction. Like, what is
okay.
it?
Okay. Number three. Mm-hmm. This is going to surprise you. Black and white cookie.
No, it doesn't surprise me.
Black and white cookie.
You're from Long Island.
Kind of like a cake.
And like, what is the... It's not chocolate and it's not vanilla.
It's strange. It's like a cake with like a thick layer of like
brown and white
sugar.
Brown
icing. Brown.
Like, would you
white.
Like? Was that white like flavored
brown
or brown
or the
flavored?
White? I really like it.
It's like red sauce and white sauce.
Delicious.
White sauce.
My second favorite cookie, I guess. I really love, and this is gonna upset a lot of people out there, but here's what: I don't give a shit. Oatmeal raisin.
People out there,
you know what? Here's a deal breaker for me. You meet a guy, everything's going perfectly, or a girl, everything's going perfect.
Yeah. Or somebody else.
Or this is like a sex deal breaker for everyone out there. So most people.
So everything you've got.
You meet a person that you're interested in, mm-hmm. whatever your preference is. We don't care. But here's my goddamn question.
But what kind of cookie
deal
are they?
Deal breaker. You go on the date. Everything's going perfectly. You're like, oh my God, this is going to be amazing. This is my person. And then they're like, I don't like raisins. And you know what? For me, that's a deal breaker because I can't handle a person who's so deeply uneducated about food that they don't like raisins. Because I don't
There's
believe
a lot
that people
that
don't like raisins.
I don't think they've had either good raisins.
You've never had a fucking raisin then. You just don't like the look of a raisin. You don't like maybe like the California raisins. You don't like things
Do you
that
remember
are
when
tiny.
You, like you make your own pickled and plumped like a raisin.
Yeah.
That's my alcoholic personality. You used to make your own raisins. At Brucey.
Oh, yes, of course.
And they were delightful.
Listen, here's the deal.
Which is just dried out fruit.
I accept everybody not liking certain things. When people say they don't like mayonnaise, for instance, that disturbs me and makes me sad, but I understand it. You know what I mean? It can be texturally gross or it seems like reminds you of cum or whatever. Who knows? But raisins?
First person that's ever said that.
What's the issue with a raisin? It's delicious. It's just like a sweet little chewy piece of fruit. What's the problem?
Yeah, and there's so many different kinds of raisins to discriminate.
You don't like raisins in anything? Like, I can't.
Well,
people
used to say that about prunes.
Right, which is just, for the record, a horrible branding of a delicious food.
And I'm sorry, but just so everybody is clear out there how I feel about this and my opinion stands, and we can still be friends and we can agree to disagree, but craisins are a no-no.
Oh, no.
Craisins are a no-no.
No. Dried cranberry is fine, but
let's duke it out. Let's play chess over how we like craisins.
And yeah.
We'll do a pros and cons list in the middle of Times Square, and there'll be a crowd around us. Like, oh, who's going to win? But I won. Craisins are failures.
A craisin battle royale.
Oh, my gosh. And there's craisin supporters. Yes.
Well, so I love oatmeal raisin cookies, and I love either a thin, crispy oatmeal raisin cookie or a thick, chewy kind of raw oatmeal raisin cookie, which is really my favorite. And then my number one favorite cookie, I'm putting chocolate chip out of the running my favorite. My number one favorite cookie is pecan sandy.
Pecan sandies are my secret favorite.
Salty. I loved the package. What was it? Nabisco? I don't know, whatever.
Keebler's. Keebler. And it feels like it's going to crumble, and it crumbles, and then it turns
delicious,
wet and moist.
Now, I like those, but I make homemade pecan sandies every year, which is really just a crumbly, delicious pecan cookie that I coat in powdered sugar.
And there's also, the world is also divided between the people that say pecan and the people that say pecan.
Oh, what did you say?
I'm more of a pecan.
Of course you are. I'm obviously a classless pecaner.
But I feel like in Wisconsin, they're Robin Leach? Pecans.
Oh, yeah?
Those pecans? No.
They say pecan.
Pecans.
We say, in Long Island, of course, we say pecan.
Yeah.
Pecan.
Well, whatever it is, buzz it up, whip it into a cookie, and shove it into my mouth. Because... And don't be giving me a 1% milk with that. I want half and half.
I can't, another issue. Same thing with the raisin people. I also can't with the people who drink 1% milk.
Or skim
milk.
Ugh. Listen, okay, so we're going to end this with a positive note.
I'm being very negative
today.
Cookies
and milk are classic. And when you're having cookies and milk, we just recommend that you have a full, fat, delicious milk. Fat's good for you.
Or if you're Breton, just half and half.
Or half and half. And heavy cream is even better. Go ahead, ferment it. Make some creme fraiche. You got it.
What's your top three?
My top three cookies are, I love the brown butter coconut cookies, which
you made those last year.
Yep. Those are made by the City Bakery. And they're very hard to find because they don't have them at every location. Mm-hmm. They don't have them at the 18th Street location.
Oh, really? That's the only one I've ever been to.
Kind of in the Flatiron.
Where are the other City Bakeries?
There's one, I think, on Prince Street. They're called Bird Baths. They have little outposts.
Oh, Bird Bath is the same as City Bakery?
Sure.
Oh.
Yeah, I think so.
I had no idea.
Well, now we know.
Okay.
The truth is out. Just like Raoul's Burger is.
Yeah.
The truth is out. So I love the coconut cookie.
Okay.
And I love a Linzer tart.
Love a Linzer tart.
Almond cookies with a little jam. Dory Greenspan has some jammers. And then my other favorite cookie is another Dory Greenspan recipe. You'd think I'd be working
for. I know what you're going to say.
The World Peace
World
Cookie.
World Peace Cookies,
They're the chocolate roll cookies. They're very easy to make. You get good chocolate, good cocoa powder. And you can even bake them in little mini muffin tins so they kind of puff up around the outside.
Yum. You made those last year. Those were amazing.
I'm going to make them this year. I have a new textured little mini muffin pan that I got from the flea market.
Adorable. Yes. I also love, I have to be honest, I love homemade Oreos.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love regular Oreos too, but I love a good homemade
Zara
Oreo.
Zara loves Oreos.
They're delicious.
They're good. And finally, if another use for cookies, this is my favorite thing that I want to die. At my funeral, I want it served off my body, is the chocolate icebox cake.
And
And you take the chocolate or cocoa vanilla wafer, chocolate wafers.
Yeah.
And you just spread whipped cream onto them, and then you let it set You can put different designs, stack them up differently.
Yeah.
You can stack them up sideways. And you let it sit, and it soaks up the cream, and it turns into the most perfect. Whoever invented that recipe is the smartest person ever.
That's a genius recipe, icebox cake.
So
delicious.
For Chef Recommends today, I think we would just want to leave you with Chef Recommends how to give a proper cookie basket away to your friends.
Oh, yes. Please. Can you
I'll tell you a couple things, and then Zara will probably give you her points because she's really smart and innovative and crafty. It doesn't have to cost you a fortune. You know, you could probably spend a couple days making maybe three or four different kinds of cookies. Don't try to do it all in one day. It gets overwhelming.
Yeah.
Divide into two, and it's okay. Some of them will stay fresh. And then I like to make the cookies, and those can be of your choice. Just remember, if you're doing a delicate cookie, to wrap it very well. And I like to use parchment paper, kind of crinkled up a little bit.
Yeah, so or that tissue paper.
Or tissue paper, so, you know, that's very classic. You can get cookie boxes. We live in New York, so there's a fabulous store here called New York Cake and Decorating Supply.
Oh, cool.
And they have a variety of different baskets. You can buy packs of five baskets.
Where is that place? I've never been there.
They moved. It used to be on 20th and 6th. They moved down the street.
Okay.
I think still on 20th. But it's a much brighter location with very bright LED lights. I can't walk in anymore. And then... You can also, I looked this morning, and those boxes are available on Amazon. They're a little more expensive, but you can get like a pack of 15 for like 10 bucks.
Okay, cool.
Delivered to your door. And amazing. Then, so get one of those little boxes because it's cute. Get some cute tissue paper and then just put the four different kinds of cookies in there. It's really easy, and wrap it with a bow, put a little note inside, you know, cut a little piece of vintage wallpaper out and write some fake calligraphy in the back.
Just find one of your favorite family heirlooms and include that.
Yes. I looked up vintage cookie tins and they were very expensive. But if you can find one or have an extra one, or you have a very important friend, maybe it could be like a cookie trade every year.
Ooh, like a very important friend.
Yeah, a very important friend. So I'm making cookie baskets. I always say I'm going to do it every year. And this year I was like, it's not that hard. Just do it. Just get it done.
Yeah, I did it last year, and I think the year before, and I love, now I feel like the people on Sweaty Balls on Saturday Night Live.
Yes, I really love chocolate, yogurt covered pretzels.
Oh my God.
With the sweet salty combination really gets me goat.
Well, but something that really excites me is putting banana in a cookie.
Oh, really?
Actually, I'm serious about that. I need to find a good recipe for banana cookies, because I have a couple of bananas, you know, not looking so hot on my counter. And I'm like, you know,
I they said that cookies started out back in the day because they were little test cakes. So they would test the oven temperature.
Oh.
And so then they became like little snack cakes.
Oh my God. That's amazing. That's so interesting. Yeah, actually, I had a thing about cookies too that I wanted to tell you.
Yeah.
Cause my original topic, but I couldn't find enough on it, was going to be about the history of leaving cookies for Santa.
Mm, yes.
And one thing that I found was that in the Great Depression, when people were already going through a really hard time and leaving cookies for Santa, families used it as a lesson to still be generous, even when you're having a hard time.
That's nice. I'm leaving cookies for Lakshmi this year.
Perfect.
She's a different goddess, and I need her more than Santa this year.
I'm leaving cookies for Satan.
Yeah.
Spicy cookies.
Davidish cookies, cayenne chocolate, paprika cookies.
Spicy red cookies.
It seems the trend this year is taking some of the classics and adding all these spices. I'm looking everywhere. People are putting paprika.
What's in the Bon Appetit?
Oh, they have all kinds of like orange arugula.
Okay.
They have all kinds of different spices and different things added to their cookies.
Nice.
Just like
we're paging through Bon Appetit's cookie issue right now.
Exactly.
I want to mention a cookie actually that my mom made for Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. So on Thanksgiving, we had tons of apple desserts, apple this and apple that. And my uncle bought a apple pie. It was delicious. And my cousin Patrick, hey Pat, made a very cute apple pie with turkey cutouts on the top. And my cousin Rory and Ika, they bought a really nice apple crumb pie from Baked. So anyway, we had lots of apple, but my mom always makes apple strudel. So I was like, Mom, I don't think you should make apple strudel. We got so many apple things this year. So she instead took phyllo dough and she layers, like just like she, you know, would use for making her famous apple strudel, a double layer, lots of butter. And between each layer, she did crushed up hazelnuts and chocolate chunks, cinnamon, sugar and dried cherries, and did three rolls of that with butter, rolled it up. So they're basically like rugula, but with phyllo dough.
Okay.
It was amazing.
That is fabulous. Best. Well, listen, folks, get your own cookie stories. And we would love to hear about what kind of cookies you're baking, or if you have some of your favorite recipes from some of your like grandmothers or grandfathers or great uncles or gay uncles or queer lesbians or whatever you have.
Any lesbian cookie recipes.
Send them to lifesabanquetshow@gmail.com or please. Find us on Instagram at lifesabanquetpodcast.
Yes.
And we are also on Facebook. And as always, we thank you very much for listening to our show. Please review and subscribe. It helps the algorithm to help us make more shows.
Exactly.
To help us get our $11 a month that we're getting paid for the show, which covers the cost of one cookie for one friend. And that is all we ask for.
Thanks, guys. This was a fun episode.
Make your cookies, give them to friends, and we'll see you next week.
Hasta la cookie pasta.
Hasta.
Cookie puss. All of our episodes are recorded right here at Studio 54 at the heart of Fort Greene, Brooklyn. Our rock star award-winning Sound editor and producer is Christine Farrell. I'm Zara Tangora.
And I'm Breton Scott. And we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening.